2023 and as high as 45% for states like Maryland and Virginia, where property values are higher. The denial has raised concerns about potential bias against Democratic-run states that have challenged the Trump administration. Just a day after denying Maryland's request, Trump approved disaster relief for several other states, including West Virginia, Kentucky, Indiana, and Michigan. Senators Chris Van Hollen, Angela Also Brooks, and Representative April McLean Delaney issued a joint statement urging Trump to reconsider the aid, emphasizing the ongoing need of communities in Allegheny and Garrett counties. 2 months after flash flooding, they are still in need of support to repair schools, libraries, and infrastructure, the lawmakers said. The state can formally appeal FEMA's decision within 30 days, and Governor Moore has indicated that Maryland will do so. In the meantime, the state has provided just under $460,000 from its state disaster recovery fund, which has faced budget shortfalls. Moore affirmed in a statement, quote, "We will continue to stand with our fellow Marylanders in Western Maryland as they rebuild from the damage caused in May," end quote. You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast is James Kemp and Josh Salem. The producer is Hannah Francis, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Brian Bull and Catherine Carley. The interim evening news director is Hannah Francis. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All our KBOO programs are made possible by the support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth.
Reporting from Boulder, Colorado, I'm Jackie Sedley. Way back in 1981, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, commonly known as the CDC, started reporting a heightened number of pneumonia cases and lesions brought on by cancer. This spike was out of the ordinary for a number of reasons, the main one being that these diseases were popping up specifically in gay men. It took the CDC a year and a half, but they finally designated this condition as acquired immunodeficiency syndrome, or AIDS. 2 years after that, scientists identified the human immunodeficiency virus, or HIV, as the cause of AIDS. It's been nearly 45 years since the onset of the AIDS epidemic, and we've come a long way. HIV is no longer considered a death sentence. There's a number of medications on the market that can be taken regularly to significantly lower one's risk of developing HIV and AIDS. This class of drugs is commonly referred to as pre-exposure prophylaxis, shortened to the nickname PrEP. Lots of individuals, especially gay men, take PrEP shots as part of their regular health routine. In mid-June, the USDA approved a highly effective new PrEP medication called lenacapavir, manufactured by the company Gilead Sciences. This is considered to be the closest manufactured drug to an HIV vaccine and has shown 99% efficacy in preventing HIV infection. Medical experts and HIV/AIDS preventative health advocates are saying this drug could potentially mark the end of AIDS globally. But that can't happen if people don't have access to the drug. Lenacapavir has a big price tag, and its drug developers are, as is often the case, putting profit at the forefront. On top of that, Trump administration budget cuts are leading to lack of support for widespread access to the drug. To learn more about the current status of the AIDS epidemic, the potential power of this new drug, and the current fight to make it widely accessible, I spoke with two public health experts. The first is Peter Mabarduke. He's the Access to Medicines Director at Public Citizen, a nonprofit consumer advocacy organization that puts pressure on the government to put the general public over corporations. Peter, for listeners that aren't familiar with AIDS, maybe they were born after the start of the epidemic, can you give a brief explanation of the disease?
AIDS is caused by HIV, a transmittable virus that devastates the body's immune system if left untreated, and can compound the effects of other diseases or infections, and has killed many millions of people. In my lifetime, the world's been through several waves of activism and resistance to try and scale up a global response to HIV in the United States and all around the world. And key to fighting AIDS has been the advent of low-cost, widely available drugs, and now, hopefully, widespread access to preventive drugs.
And one of those drugs that you're talking about is PrEP. That's the acronym that this category of drugs is often referred to with. What is PrEP exactly? I know it stands for pre-exposure prophylaxis, but what is that for individuals that don't have a STEM-minded brain?
The idea is to treat people and prepare people's immune systems before they're exposed to HIV. And increasingly, we're seeing the advent of medicine that can keep people from getting infected in the first place. And now with injectable lenacapavir, there's the possibility of a real revolution in AIDS prevention. This is a brand new technology just approved by the FDA. It's a twice-a-year injection. And in the initial clinical trials, it's proven 99% effective in preventing HIV, which means we can protect many more people and also stem the spread of the disease. There were 1.3 million new infections last year alone, 40 million people worldwide living with HIV. And if we can protect large populations from getting infected in the first place, we can see a path towards making HIV and AIDS far less of a threat to communities all around the world.
Wow, I really want to emphasize that 99% efficacy. That's a significant number.
Yeah, agreed. And I mean, we'll have to keep studying and see the continued benefits over time. But you know, these results are very promising, and it's an absolute top priority for the entire HIV community, but really even the entire global health and development community, to see widespread rollout of long-acting injectable PrEP.
So where does Public Citizen come in, and why for this specific cause?
We face a triple threat, a triple challenge, if you will, to the kind of rollout that we need. Let me say that, I mean, some epidemiologists are modeling that we have to get to 10 million, maybe tens of millions of people receiving long-acting injectable PrEP in order to have a really dramatic influence on the course of the epidemic. And they're going into this year, I think there was a fair bit of optimism and global health organizations preparing to try and make that happen. In January this year, President Trump started cutting back health programs dramatically, and the entire global health architecture is suffering, in some cases collapsing. And so there's a great deal of uncertainty now, how much funding and which organizations will be available to provide access to long-acting PrEP the way they have other technologies or the way we were preventing to do this. And you have to understand that there's an ecosystem of organizations around the world, from funders to community education and delivery groups to rural clinics, that facilitate the rollout of HIV treatments and many other health technologies. And many of those people have been fired, and many of those grants have been lost. And so we're not in a comparable position to what we were. That funding shortfall is one of three threats that we face. The others are stigma. There's always stigma for a sexually transmitted disease and a concern in communities about being seen to receive treatment. And then the third is pharma power, the patent power, monopoly pricing power of the companies that own the technologies. In this case, that's Gilead Sciences, which is based in California. We're still awaiting its access plan for some low and middle income countries, but we're concerned that where the patent monopoly remains intact, pricing could be a real barrier to countries making the decision to spend significantly and ensure their people all have access to long-acting PrEP.
HIV and AIDS, we know, disproportionately impacts certain populations, especially the queer community, men that have sex with men, and individuals of color, particularly women of color. In the past couple of years, we've seen an uptick in that demographic for HIV and AIDS. Talk about the need for medications like this new form of PrEP to be equitable to all in access, and what the consequences are if medications for diseases that particularly disproportionately impact communities of color and other marginalized communities, the consequences of not having equitable access.
Well, so marginalized communities, by definition, are already confronting stigma, already facing an uphill battle of discrimination. And that makes it all the more difficult to reach people with medical interventions, to encourage people to seek help when they're facing stigma, when they're facing discrimination. And as you've noted, in the case of HIV AIDS, disproportionately affects men who have sex with men, sex workers, injecting drug users, other vulnerable communities. And so it becomes all the more important to have a strategy to confront that stigma, including, you know, providing access as widely as possible, so it's not seen as anything extraordinary to go out and get the injection. You don't want people to feel like they're sticking their neck out. You want people to feel like what they're doing is normal, and that their friends and neighbors will see it as normal, and that it's something we all do for each other to protect the community. And if we can, you know, this is a battle that the LGBTQI community has been confronting head on with great courage, as you say, for more than 40 years now, and that has saved millions of lives. And we don't want to miss the opportunity to save millions more now by ensuring that access is as broad as possible, funding the fight and empowering communities. Certainly, we've had to fight at every step for 40 years to have AIDS be properly recognized, command attention and government resources to fight it, and to overcome the patent walls and the monopoly pricing that prescription drug corporations have imposed. And we know why the companies do that. I mean, they stand to make an incredible amount of money, and they do. They can make a lot of money. And frankly, you know, Gilead should be commended for its scientific breakthrough here, but we are very far from satisfied with its access plans at this stage. We're talking about a potentially transformative technology, but only if it reaches the people that need it. And that means we need a global strategy, not a strategy that sort of picks off one country here and there and sort of rounds up the potential generic competition to work with Gilead. So what we're looking for is global affordability, published prices, robust generic competition, which can come with royalty payments back to Gilead. We think that lenacapavir can be made for $25 a year for the two shots, according to researchers, when prepared at volume. But it, you know, so far the price for high-income countries is over $28,000. We think that the low-income country price is going to be much, much lower, and it'll sound like a good deal when it's announced. You know, it could be between $100 and $200, but that's still many times the cost of production, and it may still be too high to facilitate large volumes. And we just need to be extremely sensitive to the context and get prices down to their lowest possible point in low and middle income countries where infections are accelerating and proven quite deadly.
In the press release that I read, your organization was specifically mentioning Latin American countries. Explain a bit about the current status of the distribution of this drug.
Drug companies always prioritize the highest income countries first. Don't get me wrong, there are going to be significant access problems that we need to fight here in the United States as well. And Prep for All is an excellent organization that is fighting the access barriers in the United States. But Gilead, you know, its solution to global access was to license about 120 countries for generic competition to bring prices down for those countries more to a point where people might start to buy. That leaves many countries excluded, including most of Latin America. So I think it's 21 countries roughly in the Americas that are not covered by the licensing deal. And that means they'll be subject to Gilead's monopoly pricing, which we're quite concerned will be too high to facilitate sort of widespread demand. So what we've been doing is working with our Latin American allies to move governments to overcome the patent barrier and say, we're going to authorize generic competition in any case. We're going to import affordable generics, whether that's inside the realm of Gilead's license or not. That's a right and a power that countries always have had and is enshrined in the various global trade rules. It's also something we hope continues to bring Gilead back to the table to look for ways to lower prices further.
If this drug does become widely accessible, you said that it has revolutionary potential. Can you say a bit more about what this drug could achieve?
Well, we're talking about preventing transmission in the first place. And of course, for each case that's prevented, that may mean fewer future cases passed on. So if we can really ensure that many millions of people are taking lenacapavir in the most vulnerable communities but beyond, then we may be in a position to see transmission rates fall and the overall epidemic begin to wane to a point where it becomes a much smaller risk to humankind. And that would be more than a generational change. For the entirety of my lifetime, people have lived in fear of HIV. And as you've noted, particular communities have confronted it as one of the greatest threats and sort of a tool of marginalization, and have successfully turned it into, you know, a symbol of empowerment by fighting back. But it would be certainly one of the greatest changes in my lifetime if we're able to make AIDS a very minimal threat in the pantheon of diseases. And that's what people are working for right now. There's great unity, you know, all across the world to confront this challenge. But we weren't anticipating having to deal with Trump's funding cuts. So we have to fight back against that. And we need Gilead to come as far along with us as it can. And then we need governments to use their rights in a couple of ways. You know, we need governments all around the world to stand up and fund the fight. And we also need them to take power in their own hands and ensure that there are affordable versions of long-acting PrEP available to their people and make them available.
What would you say to individuals who hold onto the discourse that AIDS is an older epidemic and that it's kind of faded over time? From a scientific perspective, what would you say to individuals that maybe diminish its threat at this point in time?
I don't think you can tell the 1.3 million people infected last year that HIV is not a threat. I don't feel that way myself. Just because we've gotten a little used to a danger doesn't mean we shouldn't wipe it out when we have the chance. You know, there's an estimated, I think the estimated expense for each new person that contracts HIV is $1.1 million in care over their lifetime. It's much less expensive for society, for everyone, to just prevent transmission in the first place. So it makes sense economically, but I also think this is just a story of what we can do together. It's been a fantastic story of community empowerment, really. The folks in the LGBTQI community that stood up and confronted AIDS in the 1980s set an example for every social movement that has come since. And we'd really like to be able to deliver something that approaches victory in that fight after so many years of struggle. We have the chance now. We have the tools. You know, it's sort of like the medicines have gotten better bit by bit. At first, they were pretty bad. People got really sick taking the early AIDS drugs. We've come a long way since then. Science has come along. And now the question is whether we as a society are up to the challenge of making its benefits real and making those benefits real for everyone.
That was Peter Maybarduke with the nonprofit consumer advocacy organization Public Citizen. Their efforts are currently focused on making lenacapavir widely accessible, specifically across Latin America and the Caribbean. I also spoke with Jeremiah Johnson, the executive director at PrEP for All. He was diagnosed with HIV himself back in 2008 and wished he had had better options to avoid getting HIV. Now that they do exist, he's driven to ensure that more people have access. He started off by telling me about the stigma around AIDS and HIV that still exists today.
All disease happens within the context of our humanity. And when it's tied to such sensitive areas like our sexuality or drug use, it gets even more complicated. HIV, it's a virus, and there is so much medical context around that. But it's also something that historically advocates have talked about it as something that travels along the fault lines in our society. And so when we are looking at the communities that are disproportionately impacted, not just by HIV, but by other diseases, as you state, but HIV has a particularly notable way of gathering in the places where we neglect people. And we've seen that with communities of color. We've seen that within queer communities. And in recent decades, we've seen that really happen within communities impacted by the opioid epidemic and rural, mostly white communities. This virus will travel to places where we aren't taking care of people the way we need to. In the American context, the reality is that a business model is routinely applied to healthcare in America in so many ways that's really just not compatible with trying to get access to as many people as possible. Capitalism benefits from creating climates of scarcity. That's when you can drive the price up. That's when you can make people pay more. And that's sort of the antithesis of what advocates are pushing for, which is to try and drive something forward to actually end HIV as an epidemic, to actually get to a point where communities don't actually have to worry about this so much anymore. PrEP is no exception to that experience. Previously, there had been a CDC estimate that we were getting PrEP to around 33% of the 1.2 million Americans that were most in need of access. Now the CDC just revised that estimate to being 2.2 million Americans are most in need of access. So we're actually doing worse than we were thinking in terms of that. When you break that down in terms of race and ethnicity, it gets much, much worse. And we're really not getting it to very many Black communities in particular that are most in need of access. So the fact of the matter is that when it comes to lenacapavir, that efficacy within clinical trials is very exciting. But what we're worried about is that history is going to repeat itself here. And the fact is that as advocates are pressing Gilead Sciences, the manufacturer, on what they're going to do differently in terms of getting this to communities that have been left behind, they're saying a lot of things that sound really compelling and sound really fancy, and they throw out a lot of buzzwords and things that we're very used to hearing from pharmaceutical manufacturers. But when you're talking to people like Peter at Public Citizen or myself, we recognize these as things that we've heard before, and we haven't heard anything new thus far. And that is a real red flag for us and makes us feel like, once again, communities are going to get really hyped up around a new innovation, only to be let down in terms of being able to not access it.
You mentioned that my questions were particularly heavy, and that's true. So turning away from that for a minute or two here, I would love to hear your perspective, especially as someone that is living with HIV, on potentially a growth away from stigma or a growth into empowerment as we rip the mask off of a lot of these stigmatized diseases and diagnoses. I speak a lot with my own queer elders who lived through the AIDS epidemic, and I've really seen the strength and power that living with and through an epidemic like that with your community can build, and how when times of struggle now come up, whether it's COVID or whether it's a very conservative federal administration, a lot of queer elders that I know really speak to the power and strength that they built through epidemics past and what they've learned from that.
Yeah. It's that experience, including in the context of my own journey with HIV, can really manifest in so many different ways in the way that you're talking about. On the one hand, there is no denying the negative impact of stigma, particularly when we're trying to get innovations out to communities. And I think this is one reason why people are talking about lenacapavir so much, is because it is the type of innovation that you can be a bit more private about. And when we're talking about pill access for communities, the challenge is that if you are living in a community where you feel particularly unsure about keeping a bottle of pills around, perhaps if you're in a situation where access is really challenging in terms of that, this might be an option for you. And so having more options helps us get around that stigma, and that's where that innovation can really matter. On the flip side, though, as we're navigating stigma and the detrimental impact, it can also be something in terms of resilience for us as community members. I think that's what you're leaning into there. And so what I'm hopeful for in this moment, when we have so many things impacting our community, is that those of us who have survived a diagnosis, those of us who have fought through barriers in order to get access to PrEP, that we're taking this moment to draw from that experience, the education and understanding systems, understanding the game book by which pharmaceutical companies play, to really get focused right now on educating the community members that need education and advocacy now, tap into that lived experience as something that is a source of strength, and go out there and really kick ass with whether it's this administration that is actively attacking funding for HIV funding, going after insurers who are denying access to essential innovations like PrEP, or importantly, going after Gilead Sciences to try and negotiate a better deal for our community. We really need that lived experience and all of that energy right now. I think the final thing that I will say is, as we're talking about choice for community members, I hope that we also don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. The good news right now is that as we're trying to navigate the price of lenacapavir, which the list price is at $28,000 a year, so that's a hefty hurdle for us to get past, we do have generic competition for daily oral pills. And so I would hope that as we're navigating everything, that we don't forget to continue to get that option out to people as well. The reality is that there is another long-acting injectable on the market. It came out in 2021. It's once every 2 months, so it's not quite the same time span of coverage as lenacapavir. But that one, for various reasons, it just hasn't been able to scale up. It's only gotten to 2% of PrEP users in America. And so there's a lot of the story that has yet to be written on lenacapavir. And as we're going out there and talking about this, I hope that we keep a balanced perspective and pursue every pathway we can, because at the end of the day, the best PrEP option for you is going to be the one that you're actually able to access. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking to community members, keeping that in mind is also of importance.
Do you feel hopeful in these efforts to reduce the cost and make this latest drug accessible to the masses?
I don't know if hopeful is the term. I would say that we are coming from a place of a lot of experience at this point. And what I do hope is that because we've already lived through these access nightmares, now this is the fourth time. We've had it with Truvada, we had it with Descovy, we had it with Apretude. I'm hoping that stakeholders will catch on to the same patterns and not fall into the same pitfalls that we've fallen into time and time again. The reality is that pharmaceutical companies are just very poorly regulated in this country. And we're entering into this conversation at a time when politics are more unpredictable and more challenging than ever. But hopefully we're a little bit wiser. And I hope that we have those conversations about what can we do that's a little bit different this time, what's new, and what might get a better deal for our communities for real.
And finally, and I always like to ask this question, even though it personally pains me to have to ask it, but for those that are listening that don't feel like they know anyone impacted by AIDS or HIV, for someone that kind of is tuning out a bit because this conversation to them doesn't directly apply to them, what would you have to say to that individual?
I think it's a rare opportunity as human beings that we get to truly achieve something great in terms of public health. The idea that we finally do have scientific innovation and enough choices that we could actually end one of the most horrific, heart-wrenching public health scourges that we have ever seen throughout the history of humanity. And I think that's reason enough to go out there and say, hey, stakeholders, companies, politicians, this is a real opportunity and it's the wrong moment for us to turn our backs on that and not seize that moment. I also say to people, maybe you don't see this as something that is immediately impacting you, but the reality is that this is a virus and it can get out into broader society. And so right now,
KBOO, Portland, Oregon, bridging the gap between prisons, prisoners, and the community. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communication Act of 1950.